and welcome to the stream. I'm Ahmed Shahabuddin. On today's show, why are women still so poorly represented in news media? Take a look at this statistic. In 2020, women were featured as the subject and sources of news stories only 25% of the time. And that figure was found in the latest analysis of more than 30,000 stories around the world in TV, radio, print, and online sources. So what happens when women's perspectives are left out of the news? And how does it fit into the bigger picture of gender equality? Well, you can join in on this conversation with your comments and questions via our live YouTube chat. Here with us to talk about how women are seen and heard in the media in Perth, Australia, Catherine Shine, a senior lecturer in journalism at Curtin University. In Nairobi, Sarah Macharia, global coordinator at Global Media Monitoring Project. And in Newcastle, in the UK, we have Karen Ross, professor of gender and media studies at Newcastle University. Ladies, I'm so glad that you're with us. And, you know, just to address sort of the elephant in the room, it just so happens that this show topic happens when our usual host, who is Femi Oke, of course, who is a woman, unlike me, should usually be in this chair instead of me. So, you know, we're mindful of that. I can promise you there won't be any mansplaining because you are the experts. So we're here to hear from you. Let's get straight to it. I want to ask you, Sarah, you know, we heard that statistic, 25% of the time. I mean, how would you underline or highlight the real problem when it comes to representation for women in media?
Well, the problem of underrepresentation of women in mainstream news content will most likely be with us for the next 3 to 4 generations. So we're not going to see parity in our lifetime. And in fact, what we have seen over time is that the pace of progress towards gender equality has remained very glacial. The needle towards gender parity has moved only 8 points in 25 years. So really, the problem has persisted and has remained stubborn over time. And I'd just like to say this thing, that in fact, the probability of representation of visibility in the news is even slimmer for women who come from minority and marginalized groups, mm-hmm. such as racialized women, migrant women, and older women. And perhaps I can give an example.
Please give
an example.
Yes.
In the UK, for instance, the likelihood of underrepresentation more than doubles for ethnic minority women in comparison to white British women.
No, I appreciate you giving us that example because, you know, this is not just about, you know, one aspect, but things can tend to be compounded when it comes to women, minorities, as you've mentioned. I see that as you were speaking, Catherine was nodding. So I just want to give her a chance, Sarah, to jump in here. Catherine, what did you make of how Sarah sort of framed this issue, this problem? I saw you were nodding and I want to know, you know, when we talk about inclusion and then representation, those are two separate issues. Why are they important to discuss?
Well, we need those statistics that the GMMP has highlighted so consistently over time show that women are underrepresented, and that is a huge part of the problem. But the way that women are included in the news is also very important. So including minority groups, including marginalised perspectives is really important, but also trying to avoid the stereotypes that often come with including women in the news. So including women and always referencing them as mothers, for example, or mainly including women to give mm-hmm. personal opinion instead of as authority figures.
And Karen, you know, when you listen in on what's been said so far, I'm curious, you've been working on this for many years, and I know that you frame it as marginalization as well as stereotyping when we kind of outline the main issues. Why those two?
I think that, I mean, again, let me give a couple of examples. I mean, the work I'm doing at the moment is looking at older women within the media workforce who have been manoeuvred out of their jobs because of, well, for a variety of reasons, none of which are to do with their competence or the professionalism. So I would totally agree with the point that kind of Sarah's been making in terms of the, you know, we have to take a much more intersectional approach. It's not just about women. It's about, you know, women with particular characteristics. And indeed, you know, there's also issues about older people more generally being seen both in front and behind the camera in terms of newsrooms and representation. But the point about juxtaposing marginalisation with stereotyping is that it's, if you're doing research around kind of gender and media, it's actually quite difficult to try and analyse an absence, you know, the absence of women. Mm-hmm. You can only really look at where women are present, and where women are present, they tend to be exactly as Catherine's mentioned. You know, they are often seen as people who will give public personal opinion, be, you know, part of, you know, the public. We don't see women as experts. And again, just thinking about COVID, you know, we know that kind of health has been seen very much as a domain of women. However, if I think about the UK news media, and I guess it's the same everywhere else, where you would expect more women's voices to come in as expert within a kind of health context like COVID, we just didn't see that. You know, and when we when we looked at the GMMP in the last iteration, which was in 2020, right in the middle of the pandemic, we looked specifically at COVID-19 stories as opposed to, you know, more general news stories. And again, we see the same patterns repeated. And the question we have to ask surely is, why is that? Is it because women have nothing to say? Right. Is it because women are not expert? And the answer to both those questions is no.
No, of course it's not. And you know, that's why we're discussing this issue. And because you brought up the coronavirus, I want to get to some of the comments that are coming in on YouTube in a moment. But before we do, Sarah, when we talk about the coronavirus and news coverage specifically of the pandemic, we know that it skewed heavily to male experts. You know, I think it was, what, one-third? Yeah, one-third of sources quoted about the COVID-19 pandemic were women. I mean, only one-third. And I'm wondering, you know, what does that actually mean? I mean, you know, what is contributing to the problem? Are we able to identify sort of the two biggest factors in your mind, Sarah?
Well, actually, it's interesting because we found that for the longest time that we have been analyzing the science and health stories, they've always been at the back of the news agenda, occupying about 7% of all the topics in the news. But with the COVID-19 health crisis, the proportion of stories doubled to 17% of the news agenda. And as news becomes more important, gains salience, we find that women are then relegated to the margins as people who are subjects of the news, as sources in the news, which is pretty interesting, given that, you know, with health, yes?
I'm sorry, I'm only interjecting to say it's maybe not surprising, but it's astonishing that you know, there's that correlation where, you know, when women's visibility before sort of the attention of the pandemic on health, they were higher, more visible. And then once it became popular, all of a sudden they were less visible. What's driving that?
It's interesting. It seems like, you know, as stories become important on the news agenda, women, one way or the other, they tend to be relegated to the margins, and it's hard to explain that. For example, during the health crisis, it is women who are the caregivers, women who are present in trying to mitigate the impact of the pandemic on the elderly, on children, on general populations. Yet when news reporters were sourcing for expert opinion, women were, I think, about half, like 26% of those who were interviewed as experts who were present as sources as health specialists were women. And when you look at the real world statistics, almost 50% of those who work in healthcare are women.
Well,
it is really astonishing to find.
Yeah, you know, that disparity certainly invites a lot more questions. One of those I'll put to you, Karen. I mean, in the UK, I remember anecdotally that the briefings were largely delivered by men, even though, as we just heard from Sarah, you know, I'm sure there were excellent qualified women in the field doing a lot of the work. Why is this the case in your experience anecdotally, and why has such little progress been made?
Well, I mean, not even anecdotally. I mean, there's firm evidence to show that. And even, you know, media organizations themselves. I mean, The Guardian did a really interesting piece of work, and a couple of other kind of news teams have also done this, something similar, in terms of looking at where women appeared in those COVID briefings, which were regular over a very long period. Overall, I think that, you know, at least one study looked at something like, you know, briefings over 9 months, and there were very few women. Now, arguably, it's not because there weren't really, you know, expert women. Jenny Harries, for example, who was, a key person who did actually appear occasionally to kind of be part of the panel of three, which is what we tend to get in the UK. So it's not that women were entirely absent, but where you expected women to be talking and briefing the public, that was really, that was very scarcely visible. However, on the other hand, other kind of media organisations, other countries, mm-hmm. and particularly if I just think about New Zealand in particular, were much more proactive in putting women in front of the public, yeah. as were other countries. On the grounds that, you know, if we think about women's communication style, mm-hmm. particularly during COVID, there is a, not necessarily a kind of gentler style, but a different style of actually communicating health messages.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of the research would suggest that where that did happen, there was much more that the public, the citizens, you know, who were being addressed by these arguably slightly better communicators, actually understood more about COVID and, you know, how the virus was working.
Right.
But, you know, but part of, just to get back to your earlier sure. question, like, why do we get what we get? I mean, one of the reasons I would suggest, and I can say this because I'm a media academic, I don't work in a newsroom, it seems to me that partly it's because it's much easier to go to the usual suspects.
Right.
And if you already, as a journalist, if you already have a really good yeah. relationship with a particular set of experts or a particular set of politicians, you are going to go to those people.
And so if we think about... It might even be unconscious bias or just habit-forming behavior, as you're saying. You know, I mean, I think so much of human behavior, and I'm not trying to just dismiss it, that there's no misogyny involved or what have you. But I think it could be just a product of habit. Could it not?
But Ahmed, I mean, I would just, sorry, just let me just
Please.
Jump in there. I mean, I would say, I love this phrase, unconscious bias, because for me, my experience, anecdotal or otherwise, is most of these biases are anything but unconscious.
Right, right.
You know, in some ways, we use this term, but we should just be saying it's conscious bias.
Right.
There is misogyny, there is sexism, there is racism.
It's almost as if when you say unconscious bias, like you're giving people a pass, if you will, to perpetuate this pattern.
You're totally doing that, which isn't to say that there isn't unconscious bias. You know, clearly, you know, there are all sorts of ways in which we're operating, which are, you know, part of our kind of cultural DNA. I'm not saying that, but I am saying that it's not like you don't know that you're going to a man to actually yet another man, you know, spouting off yet another, which isn't to say that they don't have interesting things to say, but wouldn't it be so much more interesting to have a range of perspectives from across the spectrum of humanity?
Right. And I think, you know, often in the media, forgive me, Sarah, I just want to jump in here with a small anecdote. I mean, for a long time I've said, you know, when discussing the media, the democratization of media, which hasn't fully sort of self-actualized, if you will, that, you know, there was a time when the only voices deemed to be sort of authoritative and credible were older white men. And I think those legacies take a long time, as we're witnessing, to change, let alone completely be equalized. I do want to mention, though, if I will, Sarah, I'll put this to you. I was going to go to Catherine, but so many people in our YouTube chat, I mean, talking about bias and talking about, I'll just put it straight to you. I mean, Sid saying, the question is, when will women be satisfied? When they abolish men completely from the conversation? And then we have maybe a slightly more useful question from RKO1988, saying, how can you say women are underrepresented in media when there are literal quotas and incentives to hire women? They replace casts of movies with women, even though the films perform poor. So, needless to say, there is a lot of sort of misogyny, for lack of a better word, in our comments section. I don't know, Sarah, do you want to address those comments before I come to you, Catherine?
Well, I can say this, and it is that to a large extent, or to some extent, you can say that the issue is socialization. Mm-hmm. Karen alluded to the issue of culture. And in many cultures, particularly in the Global South context, I mean, in many cultures, women are socialized, girls and women are socialized, right, not to be present in the public eye, in the public domain.
True.
And therefore, it becomes, you know, even more difficult for them to be present, to be visible. But there is an onus here on news organizations, on mm-hmm. newsrooms, to make the effort to go out and find these women and get them to mm-hmm. To speak. You know, one thing that we found in our research is that for the first time in since 1995, there was a jump in the proportion of women who were sourced for expert opinion between 2015 and 2020, and that could be perhaps because the news organizations have taken this critique on board, and there have been some have taken this on board, and there have been a mushrooming of various initiatives to create directories of women experts. So perhaps this could be one of the reasons that we found that that jump.
Sure, sure. And let's jump to another expert. Catherine, I want to put this to you. I mean, I don't know if you want to comment on some of those comments in the YouTube chat. Maybe it's not that productive to do so, but I do want to ask you specifically. I mean, are women then, you know, we talk about socialization, are women then less likely to see themselves as experts, less likely to want to be interviewed on TV? How does that sort of play into this? You know, I know there's already been such an erosion of trust when we talk about the news media in general. So how does that work in an internalized sense?
Well, I think the most interesting thing that I found from my research is that overall, there is a very high degree of willingness to be interviewed with the women that I have interviewed myself or done through got their opinions through survey research. Mm-hmm. So I actually don't think willingness is so much of an issue. I do think that lots of women lack the confidence that men sometimes do have. Mm-hmm. So nervousness is a factor. And so journalists, I think, need to be aware of that. And women do have some reservations about appearing in the news. And some of those reservations, I think, are justified. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really important that journalists are aware of those things and really try to mitigate them and make the whole experience as positive as it can be. Mm-hmm. I think the initial approach for an interview is really, really crucial. And part of that is sort of demystifying the whole process, explaining exactly what the interview entails, what sort of information the journalist is looking for. So sort of taking the prospective source through the interview step by step can be really helpful. Mm-hmm. And I think if you give women a chance, they do want the opportunity to speak. They want the sort of the validation and the credibility that comes with that.
Yeah.
And they deserve it. I mean, I'm really shocked at some of the responses that you're getting on your, you know, through your YouTube.
Yeah.
When you look at the statistics, it's so clear mm-hmm. that women are underrepresented. This is obviously a problem that needs to be addressed. And why shouldn't women's voices be included?
I do want to also share, you know, there are some other comments like Sana Yasmin saying women's lack of representation in media basically means the exclusion of half of the population. And it's obvious that in order to develop a country, it is important to include them. We also have people who are saying, you know, that we need to be focusing on this in the Arab world. Celeste Larson saying Al Jazeera must turn its critical lens on the Arab world more often, that there's great disparity there on this issue. And I think it's just important, forgive me, Catherine, for interjecting, but I do want to just frame, you know, women in conflict zones or what have you. I mean, it can be tricky, you know, for some women in certain cultures, there is this association, for better or worse, this pressure that you must be modest, you must not speak, you know, or garner a lot of public attention. I mean, these are pockets of the world, it's not the whole world. But, you know, so culture obviously plays a role as well. And I'm wondering, Sarah, If newsrooms continue with this business as usual, what's the real fear in your mind, just to put it briefly?
Well, for sure, I think there's going to be an erosion, a continued erosion of trust in journalism. At the moment, we know that journalism is in crisis. We've heard about media organizations closing. We've heard about many cutbacks in newsrooms. And that erosion of trust leads the groups that are marginalized to found their own media organizations at the margins, which is really not what we want.
Right.
We all need to belong to the mainstream, and we need to have a media that participates, that plays its role in building a democratic society.
Right.
You know, in being a pillar of democracy and ensuring that all voices are heard.
And I see that Karen, that you were nodding as Sarah was making that point there. I do want to share with you that we have a YouTube comment coming in from Janine saying media especially is prejudiced against older women in media. We spoke about earlier, if you're a minority and a woman, then it's compounded, as well as for the elderly. Before I come to you, Sarah, Karen, to answer the question, I do want to include one more woman's voice, maybe familiar to those of you who watch this show. It is none other than Femi. She sent us this video comment. Take a listen.
Why is gender parity important to us at The Stream? I think the question should be, why is it not as important to every media organisation? We worked out several years ago that if we are not representing half of the humans in the world, we are not doing a good job. So every time we sit down and do a show, we look to see, where are the women in that conversation? What expertise can they bring to us on The Stream? Sometimes you will see more women than men. We are balancing out the universe. It is a mission that we are so proud to be on, and it is never over. You can never sit back and think, we did it this year, we'll do it again next year. We have to keep checking. But the importance of this is not just to represent women, but once you start to look at underrepresented groups in the media, you start to see many other communities who also need that platform. And once you start, you can't stop.
And it should be noted that, you know, there in 2022, 60.74% of guests on The Stream were women. That's up from 54.9% in 2021. We've exceeded our gender balance goal for the fifth year in a row. And just so you know, if you go back a few years, in 2018, we've made a public pledge to never finish a year without at least 50% women guests. And it's not just Femi, who's usually the host of the show, but many women who work behind the scenes tirelessly to put this show together. And you know, I wonder, Karen, watching some of the questions that Femi was asking, what comes to your mind? I mean, looking forward, where are the solutions? What should be done to bridge this gap?
Okay, so, I mean, I loved what Femi's saying. And, you know, well done, Al Jazeera's The Stream, for, you know, being in the vanguard. I mean, following on in some ways to the BBC's efforts with their 50-50 project, mm-hmm. which, again, they started in 2017 doing media monitoring around gender. And as Femi says, now they're looking at other kind of aspects. They're looking at disability, they're looking at class, and they're looking at racialized minorities. So media organizations are doing things. But can I just say that one of the key area that we really need to kind of focus on are journalism students, because mm-hmm. if we can actually encourage our students to think about issues around equality and intersectionality while they are still journalism students, while they're still developing their craft, before they become, you know, get into a newsroom and necessarily become acculturated to the norms of that particular newsroom, if we can get them thinking about how they want to be journalists, what their kind of moral or ethical code is, and get them thinking about these things now while they're students. And just to say, again, if I just think about my own students at Newcastle University.
Very quickly, we're running out of time. Sorry.
Okay, been working. What I'm going to say is that we have been working with the BBC's 50-50 project. And the more that we can make that interface between journalism students mm-hmm. and newsrooms, we might have some hope of producing generations of journalists who actually, this is part of their DNA.
Forgive me, Karen, I'm going to have to cut you off there, but that is certainly an aspiration that is a good way to end this show, this conversation, one that's going to continue here at The Stream. That's all the time we have for today. I do want to thank all of our guests today, Sarah, Catherine, and Karen, for joining us. Many more conversations here at The Stream.